Log Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Man's Voice here on this mid-November Sunday evening. For some of us, it's evenings. For some of us, it's night, depending on what part of the country you're in. With the time change, though, it's dark on the East Coast mostly by now. But let's get into the show. Got most of the panel in. One of the things, though, you know, Thanksgiving is coming up next week, and there's a lot going on that, as men, we have to think a lot about. For example, you know, just recently Southwest Airlines, you know, they ejected another passenger after she assaulted and hospitalized one of their employees. This is not the first time. This is, it's like happening every other day or something, that the airlines people are being beat up. And it is said that most flights, if you're traveling for Thanksgiving by air, a lot of flights will be delayed. A lot of them will be overbooked. So you need to really think about that. And CDC says that with COVID-19, it's not likely going away as they had thought, that you need to think about going to relatives' homes and whether you want to be all masked and having Thanksgiving dinner. So it's a lot to think about for us for the holiday coming up. So let's get into Ron. What are your thoughts about one of the things, I guess, what is your thoughts about traveling for the holidays?
Well, thank you, David. And, I was starting to feel a little bit more at ease about COVID-19. And lately I've been seeing in the news that here in the U.S. cases are going up in like 22 states, I think. And mind you, it's mostly among the unvaccinated people, but people that have been vaccinated, you know, the breakthrough cases. And then I've also been seeing that in Europe, actually I just saw a little while ago that Austria has ordered a lockdown, which starts at midnight tonight, their time, I guess. So I guess it already started. For people that are unvaccinated, because their cases are going up, and in Ukraine and different places in Europe. So I think we're far from this pandemic being over. So I'm not traveling anywhere, especially by plane. And, you know, I'm just being extra careful, I guess. But I have been taking, you know, some dares and going out into stores and even taking my mask off from time to time. But I think I'm going to start being a little more careful again, just in case.
Yeah, this is very strange about what's going on, because now I'm noticing that I see less people with masks on out in the public than before. Bruce, what are your thoughts on travel for the holidays and being with relatives for the holidays?
Well, thanks for calling on me as well, David. One of the big factors you touched on first was, why are we getting all these people fighting? Why is it me, not we, generation, and all of that? I think part of it is we have a breakdown of for each other. I mean, it seems like we're getting into a situation where if I disagree with you, I'm going to physically do something. I don't mean but it's a general statement. And we've lost the respect of either turning the other chin, walking away, not defusing situations, which we used to do on a regular basis. And the more people are encouraged to allow that to happen, the more more happens. And we've got an environment now that not only allows it, but in some ways encourages it by putting it on the airways and saying this and saying that, good or bad news, whatever they've always said on the internet these days, any news is good news or good PR if it's about you. So I think that's a big problem that we've got to work on. You don't hear about that much, but we do. As far as, like Ron said, on traveling, I'm just very careful wherever I go, and I haven't changed my approach at all. If I feel an area is uncomfortable, I either, one, don't go in. I was just at a train show today. We had 500 booths and thousands of people there. Everybody had masks on. It was not a big deal. I felt just fine, comfort-wise. But I wore a mask. Everybody else wore a mask. They were told to wear a mask if they wanted to come in. And we just have to go about a business of being who we are and doing what we need to do, but wearing masks wherever you feel is necessary. And if it's uncomfortable for you, then don't make the decision, personal decision, to not go in and be a part of it.
Yes. Okay, Darius, what are your thoughts on travel and spending time with your family for the holidays?
I'm thankful that grateful and thankful that I don't have to really travel. Most of my family normally comes here to Georgia, and the family members that are closer are in South Carolina, so it's about a 3.5-hour drive. So, you know, we don't have to deal with the airports. Now, my wife does have family in New York, New Jersey, that may come down, but that's on them. I just feel like everybody ought to do what they're planning on doing and just be safe. I don't think anybody should, change anything about where they're going based on COVID. I haven't seen any numbers. There's a spike in cases, but COVID overall, the deaths or whatever, hospitalizations are declining. And there's no science to it. There's no method to it. We look at Florida, who is one of the lowest. There's just an article that just came out earlier this week on Healthline, and talked about how Florida was one of the among the top 10 states as far as COVID. And then the worst is California and Texas still. California, which is one of the stricter states that require mask mandates, and Texas is one of the not so strict states in terms of masks and vaccination rates. So I don't see any science that would indicate that either or is more convincing than the other, vaccinations or non-vaccinations, mask mandates or no mask mandates. I just think we got to go about our life, man. We got to get back to living and just be safe and careful.
Okay. I have a question or a comment from Bruce's comment about people beating up people and things like that. But there was a comment when COVID first hit way back a long time ago, months ago, a year ago, that the CDC said it does get into your brain and it's causing people to be more violent than normal. So COVID is one of the issues. As I look in the news and hear the news on a daily basis about all the violence that's going on in the country, because a lot of people that get COVID, what I hear from them is strange things. You know, like one young guy that I was mentoring, who was only like 20-something years, called me up and had COVID and wanted me to answer a question. And what was the question? Do I have any grown kids? I was like, I beg your pardon. I mean, I think this COVID is more of a hassle for us medically than we are letting it be or letting it be known, because where I got that information from was a CDC White House release many, many, many months ago about COVID being something that affects your brain. Anyway, Michael, what are your thoughts on visiting family and taking trips to during the holidays, Thanksgiving Center holiday?
Oh, yeah. Thanks, David, for calling on me.
I'm speaking as a person who had COVID. I had COVID in the summer in August, one of the hottest months in California. And I still had it. I had it for 30 days. So now that it's getting cold and it's winter, I'm going to be extra cautious about wearing my mask and staying 6 feet and no, I'm not traveling to go see anybody. I was, to coin a phrase, I was scared straight. I've been literally scared straight of COVID. I'm not going to play around with it. I take it very, very serious. I really feel sorry for those who don't, who did not have it and don't know how painful and how serious it is. People who are just playing with it, I just pray for you. That's all I can say. If I were the president or if I had any power, I would probably go back to the lockdown. I know you people don't want to hear the lockdowns. I know that's not something you guys want to hear, but like I said, after what I had and what I went through, I'm going to take every possible cautious step forward to make sure that I never get that again. And I just suggest everybody listening take those same cautions because COVID is serious. COVID is not something you want to play with. Just take it serious, guys. That's all I have to say about it.
One of your relatives invited you, would you go to spend a holiday season with them? Thanksgiving?
Absolutely, positively not. No, I have no way, Jose. I'm not playing with COVID once again. I don't care if Tupac came back and asked me to come to his concert. I'm not going.
All right. Let's see. Jeremiah, I see you're online. So we are talking about holidays, travel, and spending time with your family, but also that the holiday, the travel is supposed to be overbooked and crowded and all that. What are your thoughts on men and their families and what they should be telling their families about holiday travel and having family get-togethers?
I would say stay extremely safe and be discreet in your behavior and actions. Try to protect yourself as much as you can if you do decide to travel. It's hard for some people to drive, but I would say, if you can do something instead of jumping on an airplane, you can do something kind of secluded with you and a loved one or your children or something like that. Drive, if it's not probably more than an 8 or 9 hour drive, just drive over instead of flying. And just really be careful, really, because it's still out there. It can ramp back up, and God forbid something happens, you would totally regret it. I agree with Michael.
All right. I want to.
Can I ask Jeremiah a question?
Sure, Bruce.
Hey, Jeremiah. Like you said, kind of the way Michael is leaning, and I respect his position absolutely, especially since he's been through a kind of a rough case. But my question to you would be, because I have it of myself as well, even with immediate family, Jeremiah, how do you even know, in a sense, where they've been? I mean, they interact with schools, with other people. They go to the grocery store. All this. So my point is, do we really feel safe with anyone, immediate family or otherwise? What do you say to that, Jeremiah?
I would say it's a two-part answer. I would say speak to them and kind of a basic conversation and see where it goes, because people can also enlighten you on how safe they are. So I would gauge what they're saying, what they do on a day-to-day basis, and how serious they take it to see if I want to involve myself in a function for the holidays with them, because I would think, okay, if they're pretty safe, I can trust them. And I would let them know, hey, we're coming over and we expect to trust you guys. Me and my wife is coming, and A, B, and C. On the other hand, if they're family and if you've spoken to them in the last month or two, you would already know like what type of safety precautions they are taking at all. So that would be my suggestion is go with your gut, speak to them, go with your gut and live with it. Because guess what? Your life is far more important right now than anything else because people are losing their lives.
More right. like a family's attitude than necessarily knowing every single person they may have walked within 6 feet of. And I think that's what you're saying. It's more, do they have a safe attitude?
You said, do they have a safe attitude?
Yeah, in other words, are you reading it like if your immediate family says, we're practicing safe practices to stay away from COVID, that more than knowing how many people that they've been in contact with over X amount of days or weeks, it's almost impossible. So I get the sense attitude.
Yeah, it's somewhat of the attitude. What are their actions? What are they doing to stay safe? Because you can come in contact with 10 people, but if you was cautious with all 10 people or wearing gloves or a mask or disinfecting your area at work, or if they even have gone back to work. My sister, she still doesn't even shop at the store. She still orders online and pick up in the parking lot.
Okay.
Whether it's Thanks. Walmart, Whole Foods, or whatever it is, she has something to lose. She has a baby girl that has compromised immune system, so she's extra careful. So, yeah.
All right, Jeremiah, you know, we're all your family here. This is your radio family.
And you said something that
red flagged my mind, and I want to ask you about it because a couple of months ago, you said you had got engaged. And a few minutes ago, you said, if I'm coming over and telling them that me and my wife were coming. And you missed a couple of shows. So my question is, did something happen between recently that we don't know about?
No. I was just speaking in family terms. I'm sorry. Oh, nothing okay. happened recently in the last, 30 to 45 days, nothing at all.
Just checking. All right. All right, you guys. If you were president of a university, and that's
all of you are capable of doing something like that. There is a university out there, an HBCU actually, Howard University, and a lot of the students are living in tents, and they're living in tents because the school. The students are trying to avoid mold. They're trying to avoid roaches.
Oh my gosh!
And they're trying to avoid the mice infection of the campus. So a great bunch of the students have all gotten tents and are staying on the lawn of the university. And so, if you were president of the university, let's go with Darius first. If you were president of the university, What would you do? I don't know how you feel about this, but what do you think should happen? Darius? I guess
I'm sorry, Darius.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's I don't know a whole lot about this subject. I did hear something about, them saying they had inadequate housing on campus. And to me, it seems very obvious that the administrators should be doing everything they can to bring their housing, standards up to the standards of the students' request. I mean, it just seems that with rising cost of tuition and as much as it costs to stay on campus, that there shouldn't be any issues. Concerning, things, especially rat infestations. And I applaud the students for taking a stand and saying, hey, this is unacceptable, and we're not going to just settle for inadequate housing, especially when you have faculty, and administrators that are making, mid to high six-figure incomes and salaries. So, I stand with the students. I say, yeah, they should stand their ground and demand and expect better.
All right. Ron, what about you? If you were president of the university, because it's COVID also. So would you send them home? Would you, what would you do? Because you have an
thing I would do is relocate the students to maybe a hotel or someplace where they're safer. Not intense to me. That seems unacceptable. And I would form a committee right away to look into how they got to the point where there's rat infestation, and you know, there's somebody's got to pay the price. One person or more than one person needs to be held accountable. And yeah, the buck always stops at the top. So in a way, you know, the president of the university should be held accountable. But I would be looking to see how it got to the condition where it's in, have a committee look into that and fix it, and maybe reach out to the donors for some additional funding to help with the emergency situation.
Okay.
David, can I add something?
Sure.
I wanted to ask a question too. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I think because you said maybe – you know, how it's gotten this condition. I think with the absence of all the students and faculty during the pandemic, because I've seen a soar in numbers as far as mold and mildew, because a lot of places were shut down. Probably the AC's not even running, because who wants to pay an electric bill and nobody's on the campus? But I still think the air should have been on. But that's what causes the mold condensation, heat mixture, and then also I'm not too sure about the infestation on with insects or rats, but just the absence of everyone, and probably pest control companies stopped coming too. So, and you know, I'm in a line of work where I'm entering to buildings or dealing with business owners and schools and things of that nature, and I've seen more than a few mold situations already as it is. So that's going to be the big boomer for businesses right now, because everybody's going to have mold and mildew. Just like everyone needed to pretty much get sanitized, all the businesses need to be sanitized and stay safe. Now that's the next thing, is everybody has mold and mildew.
All right.
So Jeremiah,
FYI, this university is in Washington, D.C. And, okay, now that was Ron. I said, Ron, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but Jeremiah, don't you think that before the students came back and faculty, et cetera, that there should have been a thorough inspection just like a lot of places did? I mean, because this obviously it's not a problem that happens in places all across the country. It's isolated incidents. So I think there wasn't a thorough inspection of the place before people came back, and maybe there should have been.
I agree, and then people try to, because it could be expensive to eradicate all these issues at one time, and then you're expecting students in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So a lot of things, remember, usually you'd have to paint, clean, et cetera, already. With the turnover from, you know, summer to fall, with whenever everyone like really vacates and goes off for the summer and comes back, because I have a few contracts with a few local universities for upkeeping during that time. So yes, they probably noticed it, but they try to look over it by painting over mold, thinking it's going to go away, bleach it down, but it's mold and mildew is airborne. That's part of the, we probably look at it like maybe rats or roach or insects, but mold and mildew is a killer. It's a lung killer, and it's an airborne disease. It's an airborne bacteria. So if it's on the wall, is on the bed, is on the sheets, is in your clothes, it's everywhere.
So the question, though, Jeremiah, is as president of the university, you have a great knowledge of it. What would be your move?
Man, I would do what needs to be done in the best sake of those students. They need to be put in better housing. until that area is rectified. It shouldn't be intense. Maybe the president's acting like it's a nuance, like, oh, really? Or maybe, you know, she didn't get informed of these issues. Maybe it stayed at a lower level prior to these kids, prior to the students coming back. But it needs to be rectified as soon as possible. I don't know how many students they have that are intense, but it could be excessive. You need to resolve it. You know, make another area, a makeshift living space for some, put some in hotels, do the best thing possible, depending on how many students you have.
All right. I see that Noel came in, and and I wanted to bring you in because you are in university. So we're talking about Howard University, and students are living in tents because the school seems to have a mold, and the students don't want to be where the roaches and the mice infection is. So they all have, a bunch of them have gotten tents now on the lawn and the football field. As a student in the university, as president of that university, what would be your thoughts and guidelines?
That's quite sad. I would subsidize their funds with hotel rooms or some trailers or some apartments, because that's just downright pitiful and sad.
Right. One of the things, though, is mold from Jeremiah Airborne and all that, but roaches and mice, I would think they're probably in the dorms. It's probably part of student, but it is not, well, the university, when they were all gone because of COVID, if this was happening, I think they should have called pest control in and took care of it. But anyway, what about you, Michael? If you were president of the university, what would you do?
Well, first, let me just say this. I saw that story. I followed it a little closely. I'd honestly, David, I think it's a publicity stunt, first of all. What I would do, I would definitely fix it to answer your question. But I think it's a publicity stunt. Those HBCUs, they're kind of big on wanting publicity a lot. I don't think it was that serious to where the students had to camp out and all that. I mean, come on, Kamala Harris went to Howard University. Media mogul Sean Puffy Combs, who's a billionaire, went to Howard University. They could have just made one phone call to one of those or any one of the alumnus and had that situation rectified in 24 hours. I don't think it was necessary for those students to camp out in tents and all that. I don't imagine the problem was that bad. Even if it was that bad, I think they could have fixed it rather quickly. I think it was just a publicity stunt. And if I were the president of the university, the president's a gentleman by the name of Wayne Jackson. If I were Wayne, I would just fix that problem. I mean, that's one phone call to a contractor to come have that cleaned up. I don't think it was that serious, and I think the students were just looking for a publicity stunt.
Antics.
Then I have a question. If it's a publicity stunt, that is, you're trying to get some word out or you're trying to get something in return. What would students be wanting to do to have put this word out or get into tents? Why would students do it? I don't understand.
I'd hate to say it, but the students this generation, they probably were just trying to get likes on their Facebook page. That's all they were trying to do.
So, what are your thoughts on that? Soel, you're in there?
I said, can you repeat what you said, please?
Pardon me? What did you say?
I said, can you repeat what you said, please?
Oh, no, okay, I was, according to Michael's comment that the students are just doing something as a publicity stunt, that it could be it could have been handled because, you know, most of the major entertainers and things of, and politicians who are African-American in the country have went to Howard University. So you could make a call and you could have people help do this and get it done. And so Michael thinks that the students are intense and things because they're just trying to have a awareness somehow. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm not familiar with Howard University, right? If it's a public or a private institution, but if it's private, you know, more shame on them for not providing accommodations for their students. And I doubt that kids would willingly sit in the middle of a tent in a football yard in the middle of November. So I think that's probably not true. And if it's a public institution, even more shame on the government for not providing accommodation for those kids.
All right.
Hey, David.
Yes.
And then I think it should be noted, though, that Howard has almost a half a billion dollars in its endowment fund. So money is not an issue. It's probably just mismanagement or a lack of concern. But the Howard is not. They're one of the stronger HBCUs in terms of finances and fundraising. Like Michael said, you have some major, major political and entertainment people
alums
that have graduated from there, alums that have graduated, you know, so they have a huge endowment fund. So it's not about money.
It's $712 million endowment, to be exact.
Yeah, good. That's a lot of
huge
money.
Huge. Yeah, right. David, I see publicity stunt. I just see publicity stunt.
Well, there,
Michael,
there,
and then remember, you're going to have, sometimes you're just going to have students that don't want to follow the new direction. So we don't know if this university put out a new direction, like, hey, guys, we're going to do A, B, and C. And they feel like, well, I don't have a car. I'm not going to go to a hotel 30 minutes away or this and this and that. Like, I want to be on campus. I'm going to get a tent on campus because I shouldn't be put in this position to do A, B, and C. Like, you know, you got those people that are outright not doing what they're told to do. These are young adults. So we can only imagine what the situation is.
All right. I think that's enough discussion on that particular one. But I want to move around the table. And Jeremiah, you weren't here for a couple of weeks. And I'm sure there's some things on your mind that you would like to present to the panelists to discuss. What is on your mind?
I would like to ask Michael something and any of our listeners. This is something I've been following and trying to understand. Michael, are you aware of any digital marketing? Because we're in a topic of schools and how university and stuff like that. Are you aware of any digital marketing universities that are really, really good? I have a nephew that wants to study that field, and I want to give him some direction. Do you know any university that's pretty good with, because it's not offered as a degree. It is offered as a continuing education certificate. Do you know if any universities are pretty good for that?
Well, yeah, being out here on the West Coast, where I'm at in California, if I had to recommend one, I'd recommend probably Berkeley's a good one, Stanford's a good one, UCLA's a good one. The ones I would recommend are basically out here on the West Coast where I'm at. So I would say Stanford,
okay.
Berkeley, UCLA.
And you know, any one of those are renowned for marketing?
I'm sorry?
Or, you know, any one of those are renowned for marketing?
Yeah, UCLA has a very prestigious marketing department, yes.
Okay.
Or, you know,
okay.
To be honest with you, any school in the UC system, I mean, out here we got UC Irvine, UC Riverside, so any school in the UC system out here in California.
Gotcha.
Anyone else?
Someone had a question?
One of the best entertainment colleges to learn all that is the Full Sail University there in Florida.
In Orlando.
Yeah, it offers 10 entertainment degree programs there. It's a very large private for-profit four-year university. It's in a very large suburb, and entertainment students graduate with students earning master's degrees and associate. They can go from associate to master there. And it's called Full Sail, and most of the people in Florida who are in the entertainment business, or a lot of people in the entertainment business, have gone to Full Sail because its degrees in entertainment business is very broad. But anyway, okay, Michael, what do you have on your mind that you would like to talk to the panel with?
Well, I want to touch on the fact that Donald Trump's right-hand man, Mr. Steve Bannon is his name, who is a devout racist, who is a far-right KKK member, was recently indicted. He got indicted on Friday, I think, or maybe it was Thursday he was indicted for contempt of Congress, meaning Congress wanted him to give up some documents and come before Congress to testify, and he refused. So they indicted him. Now, I want to talk about the indictment, and I also want to talk about white privilege, how he was indicted, and they gave him until Monday to turn himself in. So he publicly said, okay, I'll turn myself in Monday. Now, I'm speaking as a black man who also has been indicted in my life, and I didn't get the opportunity to turn myself in. The FBI kicked in my door and drug my whole family out into the driveway in handcuffs to arrest me for my indictment. And my indictment was much smaller than his. So I want to throw that to the panel. What do you guys think about Donald Trump? A, number one, former President Trump's right-hand man, Steve Bannon, got indicted, which means an indictment is coming for Trump pretty soon. And what do you guys privilege he has to turn himself in for an indictment? I'm going to start with Darius. Darius, what do you think about that?
It's funny, Michael, because this thing with Steve Bannon, I know for a fact from his actions that he wanted to be indicted. He wanted to be tried. He wants to be booked simply because there's no precedent at all for any aide to the president to ever disclose anything that the president talks about with his staff or his aides. The president has a privilege to discuss anything with his personal aides, and that is privileged information. It always has been since the beginning of the country. So this right here is unprecedented, and Steve Bannon wants this thing to go to trial because he wants them to prove, the DOJ or Congress or anybody, to prove where there's such a precedent or a law to exist that says that he has to disclose what he and the president talks about. So that aside, I noticed that we're talking about that, but nobody brought up the indictments of the people from the Clinton campaign with this Russia hoax. But I know that's another topic. It's your topic, Michael, so we're going to stick with what you said. In terms of the indictment and him being dragged out, we saw that him being allowed to come in when he wanted to. We saw that they didn't extend that privilege to Roger Stone. You know, they came to his house, guns drawn, helicopters, boats, you know, at 3 a.m, all for lying to Congress. So, yeah, I agree with you, Michael. There should be equal justice across the board for everybody. You know, this is something I'll disclose. I've been indicted before. And I was allowed a time to turn myself in. You know, I came in and I was indicted, and then I went home without ever being handcuffed or behind bars or anything. So I don't want to say that, you know, it's a race thing or it's a white privilege thing. I think it just depends on the crime and depends on how badly the prosecutor or the attorney, U.S. attorney, wants to get somebody. But like I said, we saw what happened with Roger Stone over something as simple as lying to the Congress. So, you know, it varies, and we need to crack down on that, Michael. I'm totally with you. It needs to be equal justice, you know, across the board.
Bruce, what do you think, white privilege or not?
No, not white privilege. I agree with Darius. Equal justice. Doesn't justice is blind. Justice, therefore, doesn't have a color. And it should be equally done. Is it equally done? I wouldn't disagree with you that there are countless situations where it has not. And it's usually somewhat infected by politics. If justice was allowed to administer justice, I think we'd have a much fairer society. So I agree. No color, equal justice.
Ron, what do you think?
I'm torn on this one in terms of the race thing, but I don't know if it was white privilege, but there absolutely should never be white privilege. I agree with everybody so far that justice should be blind and everybody should be treated the same. although I know that doesn't always happen. But, you know, I'm kind of glad to see that he was indicted. And to Darius's comment that this is unprecedented, well, so is the insurrection on the U.S. government unprecedented. So I think it justifies him being indicted, and he's the first of many more to come, I'm sure.
So, Ron, we should
Noel, what do you think?
Executive privilege. We should do away with executive privilege, though, Ron. Is that
yes, absolutely. When it comes to the, stability of the country, yes, absolutely.
Ron, who decides that? Who decides who's the stability of the country? The Democrats?
No, the committee that's looking into what happened.
The Fair and Honest Committee. So be it.
Noel, what do you think, buddy?
Can y'all hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, we can.
All right. Ever since I ran over my phone in the driveway, it don't really work the same no more. But
I can imagine.
You got a pretty big.
But what happened was, what happened is, I think that just criminals should be prosecuted, and whoever is the attorney general or whoever is the prosecuting attorney, they need to do their job to make sure that criminals are brought to justice. And, you know, with respect to other people who are innocent, you know, there needs to be a thorough, non-biased criminal justice system to make sure that they are not unfairly targeted in this criminal justice system. But things that happen with, like, on the Capitol and everything, you know, those people should be brought to justice, and whatever pursues forward should definitely be a part of that.
All right. All right. So let's move on. Bruce, what do you want to bring to the board this week?
Panel.
If we're going to talk about fairness and justice and all those things, which I also agree with, I think we all do, is where's the fairness and justice and reclamation on all the things that were proven wrong against the last administration that were raked over the coals, and no one's indicted, no one's brought to justice, no one's even given excuses. Time does not make that go away. So I guess my question is, if it's good for the goose, how about the gander? It's got to be fair and equitable, and it's nothing close to that when it comes to all the things that were proven not to be correct, and the press and the politicians and the current administration, they're silent.
Okay, do you have a question?
Mine.
Well, do you have any questions?
I guess my question would be, where's the fairness in that? Where's the fairness in it being so one-sided? We're not going to have a healthy democracy without it being at least somewhat close to being balanced and fair. So my question is, how do you explain that not being brought to task from all the wrongs that were proven to be not correct in the last administration?
Okay, Bruce, I guess if I can answer that question for you. My first question to that question would be, so are you trying to say that this last administration was just a squeaky clean, did nothing wrong administration? We got Michael Cohen,
no,
Michael
no.
Flynn, Steve Bannon got indicted twice, Roger
no.
Stone.
No.
Like, we can go down the list of just dirty actors that were in that administration. So
well,
are you saying we owe
them
an apology? Is that what you're saying?
To use your words, Michael, there we go again. I didn't say he's squeaky clean. There is no politician that I can really think of that's squeaky clean. None by nature of the business. But that doesn't erase the fact that so many things that he was accused of and everything else was never even acknowledged. Oh, well, that's wrong. Let's find that on the fifth section of the newspaper at the bottom column, and we'll call it good. It's such an imbalance. They're not even ashamed, embarrassed, or care about it anymore. They just want to, drive home a narrative, and that narrative is going to take the far left and hang them out to dry, because it's not. People are finally starting to get upset and worried, concerned, and threatened by what's going on. It's got nothing to do with about getting even. It's got everything to do with about equal justice.
But what's an example of something that he was accused of that turned out to be not true?
Well, from the standpoint of the last time when they said he was working with the Russian government and impeached over that. There's no proof of that. Matter of fact, they proved that that wasn't the case. There's even people in the Democratic Party that said that wasn't true. Oh, by the way, we're not going to acknowledge that. We'll just admit to you off to the side that that was the case. There's one right there. What about all the thing with Benghazi and all that about the Democrats and what they just swept under the carpet? What about the current administration and the way they've left, who knows, between dozens to hundreds of American citizens left in Afghanistan, and he just doesn't, at least apparently, unless you find something else different, that he doesn't care about that anymore. But, you know, it is what it is. What the heck kind of attitude is that? I'm just saying I have no problem going after a Republican or a Democrat, left or right, and something is truly wrong. But once someone is proven innocent instead of guilty, where's the justice there? By implication, if you do not exonerate someone for something they didn't do, then it's left hanging like they did it. And that's not justice at all in today's market.
All right. Okay, so let's see. Ron, what do you have for the panel?
Well, something that I just saw come across the news, which was kind of scary, actually. I'm sure everybody has heard of coral bleaching. And if you haven't, it's where the corals in the world's oceans turn white when the seawater temperature rises. And they just had a report that 98% of the Great Barrier Reef in Australia, which is, I think, the world's largest coral reef system, is bleached due to climate change. And I forget, I mean, I've heard this before, but I don't remember what, you know, obviously coral reefs provide home to a number, I mean, hundreds, if not thousands, of species of fish and all that, but I think they serve other purposes too, in terms of, I think, currents or things like that. And to hear that 98% of the Great Barrier Reef in Australia is bleached, and here in Florida we have the same issue going on, are we past the point of no return? What do you all think, Bruce?
No, I don't think we're at the point of no return. I think we're at the point where if we want to be global here, we need to look at this problem as a global problem. It's not the United States problem. Yes, they need to set a good example. No argument there at all. But the Republic of the United States of America cannot solve this problem alone. It's global. We need leadership in all kinds of ways. So one of the biggest culprits in all this is China. So what are we doing to help make them come in line with good practices for the environment and protecting life and all of that? I don't hear anything that's going on, and I think you would agree. We need to set a strong example, but then if we're going to be a leader, we better be a leader globally to get everybody else to start doing their part as well.
Yep, 100% agree. And I want to get like Michael's and Saul's perspectives, because they're, you know, younger than you and I, Bruce, and so they're
yeah,
inheriting basically this world that we're leaving behind, and they're going to have to deal with all the climate issues and all the problems that we've caused in the planet during the past few decades. So, Soel, what are your thoughts on what's going on?
I really don't have much to say. All the calamity in the world. Yeah, I'm kind of speechless right now.
But are you scared?
Especially global warming. I mean, over where I live, the water has to be tested annually because of chlorine leaching, because we share water with Hoover Dam. We have problems with our water here. I think our water is like second or the third worst in the country. So it's just the environment. We just need to take care of what we have.
Yep. And by the way, where you live, I know you've heard this many times, the Colorado River is running out of water. You've heard that, right?
Yeah. I'm not sure if you've heard this, but I think this is in Michigan. Nestle has a water bottling company there, and it's illegal to collect water from Michigan, like for companies to do that. But they have like an intricate system to avoid the law where they collect the water before it touches the ground, so it's not illegal, and the water has gone from the Michigan lakes over the last couple decades.
Wow, terrible. Michael, what about you? You have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, definitely I do, and thanks for calling on me, Ron. I think global warming is real, first. Let me just say that. And I hate to say it, I think, and I hate beating up on the baby boomers. I think it's the baby boomer generation's fault. I think the baby boomer generation has sucked all the energy out of the room as far as the resources, and they don't really care about what they're going to leave as far as the planet to the next generations, because all they care about is the dollar sign and the money. I'm very optimistic of the younger generation, the millennials, Generation Z, because they're more conscious when it comes to global warming and the environment. But I just hope it's not too late. I hope by the time they're in charge and they're adults that there still is a planet here for them to govern, because I honestly think it's politically divisive. I think the Republican Party and the baby boomers together, I think they don't care about global warming. I think they think it's a hoax. And I think they're destroying the planet. And I don't think we have that much time left on this planet at the rate we're going. I don't think status quo is acceptable anymore. So I think we need to do something. We need to do something now before it's too late, if it's not already too late.
Darius, what are your comments now that Michael threw politics into this?
I don't think it's a political
surprise.
Well, let's just say this. I think everybody on the panel knows already. I don't know if the listeners know. I don't believe in man-made climate change. Do I believe that there's climate change? Absolutely. So I'm not a denier. I just don't believe that man caused it. And I'll still hold to the same theory that I've always held to. If anybody can show me any events that are happening on the planet that didn't happen at some time, even if it was millions of years ago, then I will subscribe to man-made climate change. But there is no man-made. The climate has always changed. It's ever changing, and it will continue to change. You know, I think we talked about the Colorado River. I think someone said that. But do you remember that they said that Colorado River is what created the Grand Canyon in Nevada? And look at Nevada now. So, I mean, let's just pump the brakes. And yeah, do we need to be good stewards of the planet? Absolutely. Do we need to do things that are common sense measures to protect the environment? Absolutely. But should we do it at the risk of technological advancements or human mankind advancements? Should we do it at the risk of our economy and wrecking the economy? Absolutely not. There is no imminent danger to man. And like I said before, if we look at all the predictions of all the experts from all the way back in the 50s to now, not one of those predictions of extinction have come to pass. So absolutely, yeah, let's do whatever we can to protect the environment. Let's be good stewards of the earth that God has given us dominion over. But man cannot change the climate of the earth. We can't make it rain. We can't make it snow. We can't make it hot, and we can't make it cold.
Jeremiah, what about you living here in Miami in the epicenter of sea level rise? And you see it in the news, I'm sure, all the time, just like I do. How do you feel about this?
I'm like stuck in the middle. I have a hard time believing that, man, that we can or people are controlling or change the weather. I do think there, as people on this earth, we can do things to help sustain our living space by not doing certain things. But And then it's not just the baby boomers. I've seen all ages not care to dispose things properly, recycle, from the little things to the biggest things that we should be doing. I think we should have been recycling certain things, especially grab a hold on toxic waste, a lot of things that really hurt our environment and our element years ago. Just like California is, the UK, there are certain places that already recycle food, all kinds of stuff like that. So, you know, we throw away probably 20 billion tons of food a year. But I hope not that, you know, the climate change thing, I hope not.
All right. Thank you, Jeremiah.
I have something after I just found out a few seconds ago, guys, that I can share with you guys, but I'll let you finish.
No, go ahead, Jeremiah.
No, go ahead, Jeremiah.
So Mr. 45th has came to an agreement to sell one of his hotel establishments, actually the hotel in Washington, D.C., for $375 million. And it's actually a Miami investment firm that's trying to acquire the hotel. And the only thing that held it up is Mr. 45th didn't advise, because with acquisitions of new companies or properties or stuff like that, what really, companies, especially if you have employees, even with properties, is that they receive so much funds from the government for the PPP and stuff like that. So they actually receive $3.7 million of payments from the government, and it wasn't disclosed at that amount of money, and that became an issue. But they're rectifying the issue, and he's gonna be a more wealthy man now.
All right, gentlemen.
And actually, also they lost about $70 million during the pandemic. That's crazy. That's a lot of money.
And hey, David or Ron, yes. On your subject, can I pose a question to my brother Michael?
Okay.
Michael, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
All right. I'm not saying you're true in the fact that it's all the baby boomers that are causing all the trouble, but let's just say for the moment you're more right than wrong. So my question to you would be, what an excellent example then for your age group, Michael, to be the leaders and show the rest of the world and do things by example, by approach, to start making a global difference in global warming. What an excellent opportunity for the younger group then to, in a sense, be the lead on something very important. I haven't seen that happen. Would love to see it.
Well, Bruce, to answer that question, you're wrong. My generation is definitely leading in global warming. And the generation under me, there's a young lady by the name of Greta, I think Van Berg is her name. She's a young activist, and she's very outspoken on this. I mentioned Sean Puffy Combs earlier. He's of my generation. He's very active on global warming. So if my generation and the generations under me, I'm a Generation X. Generation X and the millennials, we are very proactive when it comes to that. It's just the baby boomer generation, and I hate to say it, the Republicans, as Darius mentioned, who just don't believe it's real and who are not proactive in that regard.
Well, neither group, neither the baby boomers or your group, is their millennials, and are doing a very good job of advertising those good deeds. Neither group.
All right. We're down to the 10-second mark. So we want to thank everybody who was listening. There were a bunch of women asking questions that they wanted from the panel to answer. We'll pick those up at the beginning of next week. For example, one of the questions was, how come men are allowed to have more than one sex partners, but ladies are not? So we'll pick those questions up next week. There are a list of questions. I'm sorry, ladies, that you're asking. You sent a bunch of things in. We'll pick it up next week. Everybody have a great week.
It's not that they can't. It's just less likely.
Hey, guys. Have a good week.
Have a good week, gentlemen. Stay out of trouble. God bless.
Hey, nobody told me I was allowed to have more than one. You'll find out next week, buddy.
And your wife won't tell you that either.
Somebody call my wife.
Hey,
I don't know what guys these women are dating these days.